My name is Michael Dempsey, and Zainil, my wife.
Hello.
And we are from Melbourne, and we've been on a bit of a family excursion, driven over to Perth, and had a bit of an adventure, and on our way back we came to Adelaide, actually inconveniently because the car had problems. And Zainil's always like, I want to go to Christie's Walk, I want to check this place out, and
We did yesterday.
That's right. So it was a bit of an odd time, you know, to kind of like...
Which was Sunday.
So we didn't, we didn't make any... It wasn't kind of planned or anything. We had the time. And then, of course, we had the excuse because the car couldn't drive. And we went, that's it. So we were walking around. We walked around the block. We actually had a bit of a look. And then we walked all the way around the block, had a chat with the people on the corner who've also done an interesting thing housing-wise. And then we came back past, and there was Sue and Michael having a bit of a chat. And we walked past and we thought, oh, maybe we should just ask them. So we turned back and we kind of went, okay, let's say hello and just have a bit of a chat. And that's kind of...
How we met.
How we met. That's in that, the Muriel walk.
Yes, yes.
The Muriel tunnel, or I don't know what you call it. What do you call it?
A breezeway?
A breezeway, yeah. The Muriel
it's
breezeway.
A bit of serendipity there, isn't
there?
Yeah. And it was just interesting how similar we've kind of connected, I think. And
exactly.
What we've... where we're from, and obviously what you've created here as well.
You were just telling me where you live and what it's like. So do you want to do that for the recording?
Sure. So we live in a cooperative just outside of Melbourne. It's about 35 kilometres outside of Melbourne.
And it's called?
It's called Round the Bend.
Round the Bend Conservation Co-op.
Of course, yes, that's the formality. We just call it Round the Bend. Because it kind of takes you around the bend a little bit. And it's a bit curvy out there. But the reason why it's called that is it's located in the Bend of Islands. It's a conservation suburb, which means that you can't have dogs, you can't have cats, you can't have any kind of...
No fences,
no land animals, no shooting. There's quite a lot of restrictions in there because it's more for the native flora and fauna to conserve it. And the cooperative is within there. The suburb is about 720 acres in size, and the cooperative is 320. So it's about half the size of that suburb. The cooperative has the land there, and there's 32 allotments in those 320 acres of land. And on that 320 acres, there is 24 houses currently existing.
So how much does each house have?
So the way it works is that you don't actually own the land. You have a share title. So you have a 1/32nd share of the land, which means that you can't get any kind of lending to purchase the house. You have to purchase it outright when you go to purchase. But it means that the cooperative has quite a bit of control over who comes in, who doesn't. The main reason is to conserve the native flora and fauna. We do have working bees once a month to obviously look after and maintain the land. Yep. So we go out and we do, you know, like
weeding,
work parties, weeding and so forth.
Track maintenance.
And those kind of things to maintain it as well. And it's obviously run by, you know, you've got a chairperson, you've got a secretary, you've got directors that look after the ongoing kind of running of the cooperative. So.
And you have shared resources?
Not really. We do have every house there has electricity that goes onto it. So when it was first created, 48 years ago, I think it was
1971. May 1971.
And shortly thereafter, they got actually electricity in. So when they put the tracks in, they went underground. That's obviously to protect it from bushfires. So that often, you know, when bushfires come through, trees will fall over and power lines go.
But they had to really fight the council to get that done. Because way back then in 1971, people don't put power lines underground.
Mm. And they actually had to fight the council, fight the local government as well, because it was going to be flooded as a part of the
Yarrabray Dam.
And so they basically kind of opposed that, and they won and they succeeded, and as a consequence they then purchase this area of land, and now instead of having a dam, they have a Sugarloaf reservoir. So it's quite a bit smaller as a reservoir, and it gets pumped in. So water gets pumped into that reservoir, and before it was flooded, a lot of the members of the cooperative went in and took out the trees, and a lot of those trees they've used for their to make their homes. So it was kind of utilising those things around them. So getting back to the question about resources, so power comes in from outside, underground. Gas is in
tanks
that get delivered. So that's everyone's, you know, individual responsibility. Everyone has some type of sewage of some sort, whether it be a septic tank or whether it be a
transpiration bed,
which was the old style.
And we all have rainwater tanks.
And everyone's on rainwater tanks as well. So there's no real kind of shared resources in that respect, because a lot of the houses are quite far away as well. So many of the houses, you don't even know you've got a neighbour. You're actually in the bush.
So are the houses built of a variety of materials? You were saying you live in a mud brick.
Yeah, a lot of them are mud brick. It seems to be. I think that the capital of mud brick in Australia is actually around the area in the Eltham, Bend of Islands, Kangaroo Grounds area. And so a lot of the houses are built of mud brick. I don't know how many there are, but pretty much most of them are. And then there's a few that are, I think one of them's in Besser Block. Another one's got a bit of timber in it, and another kind of new one.
The Comingas.
Yep, that's another new one as well.
So three houses are not.
Really, but out of the 24, pretty much, and Collins is wood as well.
Yeah.
So out of, you know, say five, you know, about probably, you know, 19 or 20 of them are mud brick.
Is it a fire risk where you are?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
It's non-defendable.
Non-defendable.
Well, they call it undefendable. So it means that everyone there has to have a fire plan, especially, I mean, look, you know, we're talking now because it's obviously there's a lot of fires that have gone through, like some pretty horrific things. The one thing that I'm kind of grateful for is that on each of the tracks, so there's three tracks that go into that 320 acres of land, and on those three tracks are all different houses. So there's 10 on one track, and there's about 7 on the other, and a few more on the other track. On each track, there is someone who is a member of the local fire brigade. So we're very kind of more educated, I suppose, than most others in regards to bushfires, because we have to. We actually have to. And we have a fire guard group on our track, and we keep in contact. And whenever the indicators tell us it gets a bit extreme, part of your fire plan says that you need to have a very clear decision-making process as to when you leave. And when coming into the summer seasons, we get all of our valuables, hard drives and so forth, and electronic equipment and photos and so forth, and we put it into an external storage. So we prepare for the fact that, you know, the possibility of fire coming through, and that the house, you know, may be burnt down. So that's for us, that's very real. We live with that every summer.
But you have insurance?
So we're actually renting the place, and the owner has the insurance there at the moment. That's obviously all individual as well. It is quite expensive to do so. But at the same time, the houses are quite well designed. Mudbrick's got a very good reputation when it comes to fires. All of the things when it comes to you're getting into building specifications and so forth, everyone's pretty much aware of that as well, and we're doing whatever we can to reduce that. Like the second story of our place has
shutters,
those electric steel blinds that come down over the over the windows and so forth. So you do what you can to do so, to, you know, to protect it, look after it.
But a lot of these places were designed before the Black Friday, so they haven't met today's standard. So to build those houses in today's standard, the requirement is so much more rigorous and so much more strict.
It's a combination of being, yeah, there's a lot of things that you need to do, and obviously the cost goes up. The time delay goes up from having consultations with a whole lot of different people to ensure that you're building your house to a certain standard. And then also the criteria becomes a little bit frustrating, because it's like you want to live in the bush, but if you have a certain, you know, BAL rating of your house, it means you have to clear...
What is a BAL rating?
A BAL is a bushfire attack level.
Okay.
So they have, and it's just a requirement for houses that they have to have a certain BAL rating, and basically it goes down to, if you're living in the suburbs and you've got no bushland around you, the BAL rating is obviously very low. The further into regional areas and then obviously into bushland, the higher the BAL rating is per the building regulations.
So where requirement we live is 40.
And so where we live, you'd have to have a minimum of BAL 29, and it does go up to what they call flame zone. Where we live, it would probably close up to flame zone because we've got trees within 10 metres of our house.
Like we can touch a tree from our deck.
So if there was a fire, it would be perilous.
And that's one of the reasons why everyone has a plan and they leave at certain times, because it's like, to try and defend there, it's really you're taking your life in your hands, to try and stay there and protect. Unless you've really done your homework and you've done some really good, you've got an extra 10,000 to 20,000 litre tank, which is there. You have a petrol pump, and then also you have access to it from multiple portions of your house, depending on which way the fire comes. And obviously, you're educated in what to do in the event of a fire. Most people, they go, you know what? It's too much of a difficult scenario. Let's just pack up the house. Let's take all our valuables and let's be prepared to leave on those days. And the days seem to be getting, there's more of them, rather than less.
The fire season seems to be getting longer.
But that's not, we didn't go there for that. We went there because it's a beautiful place.
Yes. Yes, we shouldn't focus on that.
Maybe we should turn our attention on why we're there, not why we want to leave or have to leave.
Look, we have wallabies that come and eat.
Of our deck.
We have a raised beds and...
We have cockatoos and we've got water dishes, and the cockatoos come up and they, like, we've got stones and pebbles in the bottom of the dish, and they dip their head in and they pick up one of the stones and they throw it onto the terracotta deck, and we're through the window tapping on the window going, hey, stop that, and they look at you with this one eye and they go, oh, really? Oh, let me do it again. And they pick it up, throw it out onto the terracotta, and this stone goes clang, clang, clang. We're like banging on the window, and they're like they think this is hilarious.
Yeah.
So we go to the door, and then we run out. We, kind of wanted to chase them away. They look at us coming along the deck. They reach their head in. They pick up another stone, and then they fly off with it.
So who wins?
But they're just lovely nature.
I mean, you love
them because they're such kind of characters.
Yeah.
Where else in the world would you actually have something like that?
Yeah.
Coming onto your deck, playing these games.
Saying, like look at me.
Like a little, naughty child or whatever, and then you get frustrated with it, but then you have to laugh.
You've got to laugh.
And we have king parrots, and we have crimson rosellas and
echidnas, wombats.
Sugar gliders.
Oh yeah, the little sugar glider. Yeah. And fascagales.
Fascagales
are like a small squirrel, which is native to the area. Mm-hmm. And
it's got bushy tails.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's as small as a little squirrel. If you could think of a little rat with a very long, very bushy tail. The bushy tail is about the length and size of the body.
Oh wow!
So it looks kind of like a squirrel. They just forage around under the leaf litter and so forth for insects and so on, and they can scramble up trees. They've got incredibly sharp claws, so they can run up and down trees very similar way to a squirrel. So they're there.
Possums, of course. Yes, possums. Koalas.
Oh yeah, we have koala. On Christmas Day, last Christmas Day, we had a koala there, which is beautiful. So
what made you decide that you wanted to live in the bush?
That's a good question, isn't it? We've probably got different answers, haven't we? What's your answer?
Oh, it's being close to nature. It's just being surrounded by trees, and it's an incredibly beautiful space to live. No cats, no dogs barking, no. It's such incredibly beautiful space.
And is it intergenerational?
That's a good question too. Mm. Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm going to answer the same question as I knew on, because before we go to that, I'm going to say that for me, I think it's the it's not so much the solitude, but it's the peace.
Mm.
You know, when you're in the city, and most cities have a hum, they have a bit of a buzz to them. They have a bit of a vibe, you know, that goes on, and you can get into the vibe, and that can be kind of, you know, quite enjoyable. We're here in Adelaide, and we love the vibe of the city.
Yeah.
And Melbourne has a similar kind of vibe, but I travel a lot for what I do work-wise, and I go to a lot of different cities, and the thing I love is that when I'm driving back from the office or from the airport, I drive along, and it's all through suburbia, and it's a process of unwinding.
Mm.
And so you go through suburbia, then you go through a bit more kind of less suburbia, more regional, and then more regional, and then more bushland. And at each stage that you go, I just feel an unwinding, relaxing, kind of like... And by the time I cross over the bridge, that we've got a bridge that goes over, it's over, you know, into the Bend of Islands, which is a suburb, and I know that I'm only about 5 kilometres from going home, it's like this sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of come up the hill and you're winding around and you're going slower because there's obviously a lot more kind of
wildlife.
Natural animals and wildlife to avoid them. And by the time I get home, it's like a big sigh of relief from whatever kind of things you've been doing during the day. And then the flip side is, in the morning, you get up and it's like you're sad to go. But as you go, you drive out and then it's like you start to wind up and get prepared for... whatever it is the day brings. So it's a really interesting kind of thing. It's a bit of a commute. I do commute. But I found it really enjoyable. So it's a really beautiful place to just, you know, it's you know, what are that, you know, what's a cliche? A home away from home.
Mm.
You know, that type of thing. Or it's a, you know, and one of the other guys there says it's another day in paradise. And we thought, can it be like that every day? And... we've found out, yes, it can.
Mm.
You know, it really can. Every day is different. Every day is special in one respect. Like, just... oh, my phone's going off. I don't know. That's okay. One thing which was fascinating about maybe a month ago, just at the end of our driveway, there was a wedge-tailed eagle.
Ooh.
And so we're driving out, and there's a wedge-tailed eagle. It's on the ground. The thing... it is... I mean... we've seen them in the sky a lot. They fly around a lot. To see them on the ground is just another thing.
Mm.
This bird was the most amazing thing to see. It was staring at us because we'd driven up right at the end of our driveway, and it was only a couple of metres from us in the car, and it was sitting on a log just on the side of the track. It was about a metre tall.
Whoa.
The colours... oh my God.
The colours and the feathers around its neck, you know, were all kind of puffed out a little bit. But the look in its eyes, you know, that you could actually see it in its eyes. And I was trying to get a photo, and I had a new phone and just it didn't work and so forth. But when it then eventually turned and went to fly off. But it's so big that when it went to fly, it was kind of a little bit cumbersome because it was so big. When it went to fly, you know, you see small birds, they can fly off quite big, but large birds, they're kind of like, they're not really kind of getting off until they get a bit of speed with them, and then they can glide, and of course, they're beautiful gliding. So it was just,
it was a moment.
It was just a beautiful...
one of those aha moments of life.
It was a moment.
And, you know, that's why we're there.
Mm.
We're there for those moments. And there's, you know, they're little snippets, little things, and... like we mentioned before, there was a koala that had come down when it was hot, you know, last Christmas. And we went down and we put a bit of water down there, and there it is. It's right there. It's not, you know. So it's those kind of moments that you just think you're in nature.
Mm.
You're not observing it from elsewhere. You're kind of like trying to be a part of it.
Living with
much,
it. Yeah.
As much
yeah.
as possible.
You're living
and I think that's
it.
The... secretly, that's kind of what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Is try to be a part of nature, not try to just observe it from a distance. And I think that we're pretty close. We're pretty close, aren't we?
Yeah.
That actually sounds quite wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
It is. It's very special, and it's a real privilege.
Yeah.
It's a real privilege.
It is. And the houses, they really blend into the landscape and the colours. Like, you know, body corporate here, you might have said that you can't put your clothes on the line outside on the veranda. For us, it's that the colour needs to blend into the bush. So the only colour, the colour palettes are quite limited.
And that's all because you don't want anything stark.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? You don't want anything kind of out of place. You want to try to blend into the
It has to look like it fits.
Yeah. And you can kind of think, oh, that's a bit restrictive. But when you drive around, all of the houses blend in.
Mm.
And it's got this really, it's really in harmony. You know, it really has that, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it has that real harmony. Like pretty much every place there has that real, like, it's
trying to minimise its footprint in the bush.
Mm.
But also aesthetically as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
And are we intergenerational? We have people in the 80s.
Yep.
We have people in the 50s, in the 40s, and we have teenagers, but we don't have young kids. Well, not yet. Well, Alana and Murray, they're in the late 20s, so who knows whether they're going to...
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is a bit of a kind of like a theme that needs to be addressed because it's the criteria for living there is so, I don't want to say strict, but it is strict. Do you know what I mean? But it's because it's so specific, it only suits, you know, certain kind of people, and you do need to be really aware of that.
And do you have to be fairly agile, mobile, be able to get around?
Obviously, if you're going to live in an undefendable bushfire area, you do need to not put yourself at risk. Do you know what I mean? So you need to be and of course, a lot of the terrain is quite hilly as well. And that is, it becomes a bit more of an issue because some of the original members there, they've been there for the 40-odd years.
Mm.
48 years.
And they want to age in place?
And some of them don't want to leave at all, you know what I mean?
Even though they're in a wheelchair, they still don't want to go. So they don't go upstairs anymore because they can't.
Yeah,
they live on the ground level.
Yeah, and there's other things that, no way, he's not leaving at all, you know? So there's a number of people that are just like, no, they don't want to go. Because it's their life. Who would want to go from there to an apartment in a suburb?
Mm.
You know, it's just, you live there all your life. That's the last thing you want to do. So I think that they're doing whatever they can to stay. But the thing is that you do need to have another influx of people coming in.
Mm.
And that is a bit of a concern. It's the one thing that I think that everyone's kind of looking at. How can we do that? And how can we, you know, get people in?
That's a challenge.
Yeah, it is a challenge. Because a lot of people, they don't want to live in the city, they want to be with their friends and so forth. It's not a...
Because I have friends who come for a visit and they loved it and I said, well, there's a place for sale up there. And I said, I'm not ready for this. I still want to go out clubbing on Saturday and come back at 4 a.m, like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not ready for this. Is it maybe 165 I'll be ready for this, but...
Is that how old were they, 20?
Yeah, that's interesting. So do you want to say a little bit about your PhD and your master's that you did?
I'm interested in urban food production. So for my master's, I looked at how people grow food in their backyard and the variety and the capacity and the volume of food that people grow in their backyard, which is amazing. And for my master's, I'm looking at a different breed of farmers. These are farmers by choice, and they were once professional who live in the city. People who were like radiologists, pharmacies, just lots of different people. Business people who've just decided that I'm not going to do this work anymore, I'm going to become a farmer and learn the hard way to be a farmer. And they're mostly small-scale farmers, and they do what we call regenerative farming. It could be permaculture or biodynamic or a combination of different natural farming. And they don't sell through the supermarket. They are connected directly to the customers, either through community-supported agriculture or through farmers market. So I'm still halfway through my research, yeah.
But they're tech savvy as well.
Yes.
So they'll use different social media.
Yes.
To
yes,
be
that's
able
true,
to
yep.
to get their to promote their products where they are. But you've got to tell some of the products. Like what about that couple down just outside of Geelong? They used to have a chemist, didn't they?
Yes,
they were pharmacists.
They were pharmacists, and they're just fascinating. They do goat's cheese, and it's and their products has won so many awards. They're just beautiful, beautiful products, and it's not commercially available. You can't buy it from the supermarket. You have to go to their farm gate to buy it.
Oh, wow.
And they sell it every month.
Yeah.
They have it, they sell it.
Yep.
And the beautiful thing is that if you go down to there to visit, all of their goats have little necklaces around them, and they have little tags with names.
Yes.
And so all of their goats are named, and they're cute. And then you're running along, and they're kind of like, they're hopping after you, you know, with the little name tags, you know. And they've all got their own individual personalities.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, you know, people talk about like a petting zoo and stuff like that, but it's like this is actually real farming, you know what I mean? It's, it's far more interactive. And they've done it. I mean, obviously being pharmacists or chemists in their, you know, in their professional role, I can imagine that they would have had used their skills to be able to then produce the best quality cheeses, yogurts, milks, and goats as well.
And they love it.
Who they go to the
people?
Oh my god, they are just—they're really quirky, funny people, and they're so savvy with the social media. And they would take photos of the goats and say, yeah, just quirky things about the goats.
So they give you a bit of a rundown on what the goats have been doing on social media.
Yes.
That's fabulous.
And they're highly entertaining, the goats. They're really quite smart because they get away around the farm and they know how to get in and out of gates and so forth.
Yeah, they know how to open gates and open doors.
And they'll eat anything.
Yeah.
It's fascinating, yeah.
And they're just fun to be around. You're walking around and you've got this little entourage of goats following you around. So Anil was interviewing them, and of course I'm just hanging out with all of the different goats. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But that's one example.
And
what about
Sally and Colin, who Sally still works in academia, and Colin used to be a school teacher, and they decided to be cattle and lamb, produce beef and lamb. They have introduced trees back onto their land to manage the land and the soil, and it really upset some of the local farmers, because the local farmers were saying that they spend years clearing the land and why are you putting back trees? It's opposite to what we've been told to do. But they're different. They've done their research and they said, this is how we want to manage the land. We want to put back more trees. Yeah, and the same thing. They have a very long waiting list for people wanting to buy their produce because they limit the amount of meat that they produce every year, so not to overgraze the land.
Mm.
So they produce only so much, and you have to be within the Community Support Agriculture group, the CSA group mailing list, and if you missed out, that's it, you missed out. It's not in their interest to expand and grow.
No, it's quite a different principle, isn't it, from
it
that
is.
Mass farming.
Hmm.
Mm. And then what about the radiologist? Who lives in the shed?
Oh, yes.
He's got a beard. He's got a beard, hasn't he?
This is my friend Paul, and I've known him for so many years because we did the permaculture course together, and as a radiologist, he was just so unhappy. And so when I went to his farm and interviewed him, he's totally like a different person. He is so much more outgoing and so happy. And he lives in a shed.
He's got a beard, you know. But like, Melbourne gets cold.
Yeah.
And that shed is not insulated.
No.
Like, his living conditions are not the best. But he's happy. He is really happy.
He's so happy. I've never seen him so happy.
And but he now, what does he do? He has, is it 3 acres of land that he's?
Oh, he has quite a big acreage,
and he's renting it too, isn't he? So he doesn't own it.
Oh gosh,
he's renting it off a local farmer just outside of, or just on the periphery of Melbourne, just near the airport.
Yeah, near the airport. Yeah.
And there's a creek that runs past, and he's just producing
market gardens, beautiful produce. Oh my god, his eggplants and his silver beads, and it was just beautiful. And garlic, he's into garlic. Yeah. And he tries and have people over on a regular basis, like a farm walk, to educate people how your food is grown.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is.
And doesn't he get, like, backpackers seem to help him too?
No, these are his mates from...
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought it was backpackers anyway. Yeah. But he always has you know, helpers out there to help him out. But yeah, it was really interesting to kind of just see where this guy was.
Yeah.
From having to, you know, been in a professional role in a large hospital.
He was just so unhappy. He was miserable.
And now he's...
happy. So happy.
Now he's a farmer living in a shed.
That's a wonderful story, though.
Yeah. And he's young. He's like in his mid-30s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing that I've noticed is that there's a lot of people that are looking for that change,
mm-hmm.
and these are the ones that are doing it. They're doing it in this way.
Yeah.
They've just gone, you know, what am I kind of interested in? What am I passionate about? Oh, I'm interested in this. And they just dive into it.
Yeah.
And they're doing it with a very different viewpoint. You know, they've done, permaculture.
Yeah,
permaculture, or they've done some kind of research into some ways of doing things a bit more organically or holistically.
And it's all about looking after the land and building the soil and making sure that the moisture, they retain as much moisture on the land as possible by creating dams and swales and planting different trees and placing. It's all about the design of the farm. So if you go to these farms, they are just beautiful. It's not just brown and...
Mm.
degraded like most.
It's living with the land, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Mm.
And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful design. It's always lush and green, and there's so much to see. And the animals, they just follow you around. They're just like...
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot to be said for that.
Mm. Yeah.
So did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Sounds like
you have a wonderful lifestyle.
I just think that people need to come together as a community and become more resilient and build that community capacity.
Mm.
I think that's one thing that really attracted us to wanting to find out a little bit more about here, about Chrissy's Walk. It's like, well, how do you guys do it? Do you know what I mean?
Because you're in an urban environment.
You're doing it in the urban setting, which is different. What is it like? Do you know what I mean? So, of course, we're coming from a different...
Yeah.
Very, very different kind of place, but has similarities,
but
quite a bit of differences as well. And we also, the other thing we did was we when we were travelling, you know, like travel is an interesting thing, how you run into some interesting people at different times. We were in Denmark.
In WA.
In Western Australia.
Yep.
So we just left. We didn't really have a place to stay. We'd driven all day. We were a bit tired. And we were hoping to find a place to stay. Everything was booked out. We went, it was like one of those things, you couldn't find a place. So we went to a local fish and chip shop. We usually wouldn't go there because we've been vegetarian for a number of years and now we've gone vegan. So we're like, but
it's hard when you travel.
It is hard.
When you go to small towns.
But due to practical scenarios, we're like, you know what, we'll just see what we can do. And we walked into this place and... There was no one in it. No one.
It was 8 o'clock. They were about to close. There was nothing else to eat.
We walked in, and as we walked in, this other girl walked in. And what did you say to her?
Are you local?
And what did she say?
Well, I used to.
Anyway, so they got chatting, right? I went around to different hotels and trying to find out, you know, if there was accommodation, which there wasn't. There was just nowhere else.
Because she was looking for a place. She just arrived from Perth. And I said, well, we don't have a place to stay. And then she said, I don't have a place to stay, but let me call my friend.
And
she did.
So she called a friend, right? And then we ended up, one of those weird things. We ended up driving out of town about 10 minutes. And we're thinking, where are we going? And then we went down this track. And then we went through this gate. And then we arrived at this... kind of...
Mud brick community hall.
A community hall that was rammed earth.
Oh, it
was rammed earth. And we were like, oh, how cool is this? This is really nice. And then we met someone who was living there, and then she kind of showed us, and there was a caravan that was there, and she said, look, you can stay here, no problems. So we stayed. So we found this accommodation in this place. The next day, we started chatting with them, and this place is a... run like a cooperative.
It is a co-op. And it's an eco-co-op.
It's a little bit smaller than the one we're in. It's 150 acres rather than 320. And they said that the people who originally set it up went over to Victoria.
To Muramura.
Oh.
Now, Muramura is another, obviously, cooperative, right, that was set up. But the original person who set up Muramura...
Peter Koch.
He was also involved with Round the Bend.
Oh, my
gosh.
In
the early days, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, he was.
So there's this weird connection that it's gone from Round the Bend to Muramura, then from Muramura it's inspired to go over to Western Australia, and now this one called the Warri, and we randomly ended up staying the night there. It was... Anyway, we had a great chat with the people who'd been there for...
And it was a lovely place. They have so many avocado trees and chickens and macadamias and lemons and big veggie garden. My God, the veggie garden is...
Oh, wow. So you wouldn't have even known about it.
We had no idea. No. There's just no way we would have known about it at all unless we kind of went to this random fish and chip shop and asked a random person walking in. Or actually the only person who walked in. But we've got to say, I suppose, that the way it's structured is quite different because there's a lot of cleared land there.
Oh,
so they're using it for different reasons as well. So it's not like where we're living, it's more conservation, conserving the land and the environment and the flora and the fauna, whereas there they're looking at it more...
They approach it more like a village. Yeah. So it's more structured like a village, which is nice.
But inspired.
Both have their... ups and downs, don't they?
Yeah. Everything kind of, and it just suits different people with different needs and different kind of personalities and so forth. So it was just one of those random things, you know. Like,
here and we are. Then we came here and said we have to go to Christie Walk. We're in Adelaide.
Yeah.
And now here we are.
It's quite amazing, isn't it? Because I recently moved apartments from 1 to 2, and that was because I couldn't think where else I'd live. I wanted to move out of number one for a variety of reasons, but where would I go? So, it's once you've tasted the lifestyle, you sort of stick with it, don't you?
And I think that's similar for us to a certain extent as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, well, thank you. That was quite amazing.
Oh, that's okay. We just having a chat.